Hi, folks, and welcome to Openly Iris. I am Rick, and with me, as always, is Ro. Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, we are going back in time about 10 years or so, and oddly enough, it's interesting, when I was writing down the statistics for this particular episode, we are one day past the 10-year anniversary of the airing of this episode.
Oh, are we? Wait, yeah. 2001?
Yep.
Oh, August, yeah, you're right. We are 1,001. I was like looking at it, like, wait a minute. Like, no, wait, no, yeah, yes, it is. I can read.
So, this episode of Stargate SG-1 is called 2001. It's the tenth episode of season 5, aired August 31st, 2001. IMDb rating of 8.5, written by Brad Wright, and directed by the wonderful Peter DeLuise. We start with Previously on Stargate SG-1. In Season 4, a crumpled note comes through the Stargate with a warning in Jack's handwriting and blood saying, under no circumstances go to P4C970. See Season 4, Episode 16, 2010.
Yes.
Now, in Season 5, SG-1 returned from a successful mission to open relations with an agrarian race called the Volians, who in turn introduced them to a race both willing and capable of defending Earth from the Gua'uld, a friendly, if humorless, people called the Ashen. Dun, dun, dun.
See, that should have reminded you of season 4, episode 16. But viewers, you really should just go rewatch that episode because, like, I look at season 4, I'm like, I don't remember any half of these episodes anymore. So, you know, I recommend watching 2010 before this one.
It's not a bad episode. So, okay. Roll credits. In the briefing room, everyone has their Sunday best on as Sam gives a presentation to lots of brass and explains that the Ashen are reluctant to let Earth know where their homeworld is until they have an agreement signed, since they don't have any way to secure their own Stargate, like an Iris. But they are very technologically advanced and even created a second star for the Volians by igniting one of their gas giants, thus doubling their agricultural output. Ambassador Squarejaw, who you might remember was married to Sam in the alternate future, asks Sam how they did that. But before she jumps down the rabbit hole, Jack saves the briefing, and they table that explanation and settle for saying that a race that can do that can be believed when they say they are a match for the Gua'uld. Hammond asks if the Ashen have a gate, why haven't they come visiting? And Sam explains that their gate was found buried like the one on Earth, but they never found a DHD, without which they can only travel to a few nearby planets, and this is the crux of the deal. Earth has a DHD, the information from the cartouche at Abydos, and the knowledge Jack got from the teaching device of the Ancients that would allow the Ashen to use their gate to its fullest potential. They are willing to trade tons of technology for this information. Teal'c points out that O'Neill mistrusts the Ashen, which Jack vehemently denies, saying he didn't say he doesn't trust them, he just doesn't trust anyone without a sense of humor.
No, that's a good advice. That's really good advice.
Yeah, it is. And if you remember in 2010, O'Neill was the I told you so after the fact. Hammond says that the Ashen representative will meet with Earth representative Ambassador Handsome tomorrow on P3A194, the Volian homeworld. Jack and Sam will escort him, a fact which makes Squarejaw and Sam send mushy, heart-filled looks at each other. He tells Daniel and Teal'c to dig around and see if the Volians are really as into the Ashen as they seem to be. Dismissed. Ambassador Suit Model, okay, his name is Faxon, asks Sam for a crash course on Stargate, so she gives him the nickel tour. In the control room, she asks Walter if they've made any progress, and he said they should have it narrowed down to a handful of planets by tomorrow. Ambassador Smolder asks what that means, and Sam says they're trying to determine the Ashen homeworld based on the fact that a DHD-less gate has an effective radius of about 300 light-years, so they're checking on all viable planets within that distance of the Volian system. Faxon then realizes that he's hungry, and Sam says they can go get some food at the mess hall. I'd like that very much. As they leave, Walter calls maintenance to come sweep up all the hearts and doves that fell on the floor behind the two. The next morning in the gate room, SG-1 are waiting for the dialing to end when Faxon joins them wearing his usual suit and dress shoes and briefcase. The rest of the team are in their usual fatigues and weapons. Jack questions his fashion choice, but Faxon says he was told he didn't need to wear a uniform and wanted to make a good impression. Everyone says he looks fine, but Jack says it's the shoes. They're going to get ruined. It's a farm planet. Then the gate opens and the team embarks. The gate is in the middle of a field. Daniel and Teal'c head off, and Faxon is confused that there are no signs of trade infrastructure around the gate. Then a massive harvester ship hovers over the Stargate, which rises up, lays flat under the harvester, and then forms a wormhole, and tons of grain begin to fall from the harvester into the gate, and it's a really cool special effect sequence. Jack tells Faxon that they're going to want a few of those. Then Borin of the Ashen arrives. He reminds Jack that their weapons were unnecessary, to which Jack says, "I thought you were just joking around." Borin is not amused. Borin is never amused. Sam introduces Faxon, but Borin cuts him off, saying he's not the negotiator. They're going to meet on the harvester. In the SGC, Walter tells Hammond that they found four possible worlds that could be the Ashen homeworld, and one of them is, wait for it, P4C970. He orders SG teams 3, 12, and 15 to report to the briefing room as soon as possible. In a field, Daniel and Teal'c meet up with a Volian named Keel and ask what he thinks of the Ashen. Keel gives them rave reviews, says they give medicine, machines, and help freely, and pretty much leave the Volians alone. He was even raised by an Ashen family since he's an orphan. Daniel and Teal'c are about to leave when Keel asks them to tell the Ashen that he has iron root in one of his fields and needs a machine to come help him get it out. Daniel says maybe they can help, and Keel leads them off. Meanwhile, Borin, Sam, Jack, and Faxon step onto a small metal platform and are beamed up to the nearby harvester by what is clearly a more advanced version of the rings. On the ship, Faxon is wowed, and Jack says they're going to want a few of those, too. Then they go into the meeting room, and we see Molum, dun-dun-dun, who we last saw in 2010. Not 2010 arc time, the episode, you know what I mean. Introductions are made, and after some looking around and nice CG effects, including Jack looking over the open balcony and calling Daniel and Teal'c to tell them proceedings have begun, they get to work. Daniel and Teal'c follow Keel to the iron route, which is clearly the top of some kind of truss or structure made of metal. Daniel says they can probably get rid of it for him using Teal'c's staff weapon. And with a promise of a jug of his best sweet water if they manage, Keel happily wanders off. Daniel starts digging at the base of the structure and starts to get a really bad feeling about this. In the negotiation room, Molum lays it out. We want to give you defense capabilities and more, and you have the knowledge of the Stargate network that we want. Faxon agrees that this is the sitch. Back at the field, Daniel and Teal'c have climbed down the truss about 20 feet below the field to a large chamber with ruined columns and pillars. It's the ruins of an ancient city. Or is it that ancient? On the harvester, Molum asks what is the population of Earth? 6 billion, give or take, and growing at a rate of several million a year. This is an unsustainable growth rate, Molum says, and no one disagrees. Molum asks if the U.S. as the, quote, dominant nation, unquote, is taking military action to curtail the growth rate. Faxon says no, we respect the sovereignty of our neighbors. And Molum says he is pleased to hear that, but they know that the Stargate is still largely a secret on Earth, and any treaty between the Ashen and the people of Earth must be with all the people of Earth. Faxon says he thinks he can agree to that. Underground, Teal'c and Daniel explore the ruins, determining them to be analogous to early 20th century Earth. Teal'c points out that there are no signs of battle, and Daniel says that if left to nature, it would take centuries to bury a city like this. Teal'c posits that it was maybe done to create farmland, but it's clear that the city was abandoned before it was buried. They find a building and go inside. In the SGC, Hammond explains to the other SG teams about the note, and that they are to check out the other three worlds to determine if they are or aren't the Ashen homeworld. In the harvester, details of the weapons the Ashen have are discussed, including a rather nasty-looking bioweapon, but they are curious why the other advanced races have not provided such technologies. Sam says that they are concerned that Earth would use these technologies to destroy themselves. Molum is appalled, saying true friends would take steps to help prevent that. He says that the Earth people have changed how the Ashen view the universe, and they don't take that lightly. He offers to eliminate disease, make travel instantaneous, double the human lifespan, and offer membership in the Ashen Confederation. In the gate room, SG-15 are getting ready to head out when Hammond gets a call from the president telling him to scrub the recon missions. He's pissed off and he goes to find out what the fuck. Daniel and Teal'c find a bunch of old newspapers, of course, and Daniel sets about trying to translate them. He recognizes the language as resembling an ancient Celtic language, so he should be able to figure it out. In the meeting room, Jack is concerned that the Ashen are offering way more than they seem to be getting. Mullum assures him that access to the gate network and introductions to the advanced races that Earth has already befriended is more than worth what they're offering. Faxon says he has to bring the offer to his leader, and Mullum agrees, as does he, that Mullum agrees that he does too, but he will recommend immediate commencement of trade with the Earth. Then he and Borin leave. Jack still doesn't feel good about the deal, but Faxon is quite pleased. Sam seems torn. Daniel and Teal'c are learning about a pandemic that the Ashen seem to have cured, but they still can't figure out why the city was abandoned or why Keel didn't even know it was there. In the gate room, Sam, Jack, and Faxon return, and Hammond tells Faxon that a jet is waiting to take him to Washington. But before he goes, he invites Sam to dinner the next time he's in the neighborhood. "I'd like that," she says. Walter calls maintenance again. After Faxon leaves, Hammond tells Sam and Jack to come with him. The president doesn't want to risk the treaty over a vague note and doesn't want SGC poking around and maybe ruining the deal. Jack disagrees, but Hammond's hands are tied. In the hole, Daniel can translate that the Ashen vaccine had a major side effect, bad enough to cause riots, but he can't translate the actual word. Jack calls them, and Daniel says he and Teal'c are in the buried ruins of the Volian Union's capital city, which was a thriving metropolis until the Ashen wiped them out. Back on Earth, Daniel says that 200 years ago, the Volians were a thriving urban civilization. Then a flu pandemic hit, the Ashen showed up in their ships and provided a vaccine for the disease. But the headline on the latest issue he could find says that the drug caused something, but he can't translate the word. But whatever it was, the Volians went from a technological civilization of millions to an agrarian race of thousands after they were saved by the Ashen. Sam says they need to tell the president, and Hammond says he's tried, but Faxon is briefing the president at that moment, and they won't take his call. Jack points out that he never used his open invitation to visit the White House that he got the last time they saved the world. Cut to Jack in a limo in Washington. He notices that the car isn't going toward Pennsylvania Avenue, and the driver says they're picking up another passenger, and then closes the partition between them. Then they stop, and our favorite political scumbag, Senator Kinsey, gets in. He and Jack spar about what's going on, but ultimately Kinsey tells Jack that the president won't see him, and this is now in the hands of the politicians. He instructs the driver to take Jack back to his plane, and then leaves. At the SGC, Hammond informs the team that the president has decided to give the Ashen several gate coordinates as a show of good faith, and Faxon will deliver them. Faxon wanted both Sam and Jack to accompany him, but Kinsey would only agree to Sam. Daniel quickly writes something down and hands it to Sam. Hammond says he won't order her to do this, but she agrees anyway. The gate is dialing, and Kinsey is smugly watching from the control room. He says to Hammond that this is an historic day. Hammond says he hopes so, but Kinsey says he was referring to Hammond's impending retirement, then walks away. In the gate room, Faxon comes in, and Sam says to him she has a lot to tell him and not much time to do. He's listening. Not much time to do so. He's listening. Sam and Faxon beam onto the harvester. Mullum and Borin are waiting. They ask about Jack, and Faxon says the colonel's duties require him to be elsewhere. Faxon offers the gift of coordinates and gate symbols of several worlds and hands them a case. They don't know what to do with it, so Sam opens it and begins to bring up the symbols on the enclosed laptop. As Mullum is rapt by the information running on the screen, Sam asks Borin if he can translate the word on the paper she has, as she couldn't make it out. He reads it quickly and says, "Sterility." Mullum realizes immediately what just happened, but Borin is slow on the uptake. Sam says they knew something was up, but now they know for sure. The Ashen sterilized the Volians and turned their planet into farmland, and that's what they want to do to Earth. Mullum orders them locked in the meeting room, and Sam says if they don't come back alive, the treaty is off. Mullum says that doesn't matter anymore, since they now have what they wanted, and they leave Sam and Faxon in the meeting room. Sam apologizes, and Faxon feels foolish. Then they hear the Stargate being dialed. They run out onto the balcony, and Sam recognizes the address for Earth is being dialed in. She pulls off her backpack and takes out a rope and ties it to the railing. She tells Faxon to follow her down, but he's a bit taken aback. She tells him to trust her, and she goes over the railing. As she rappels down, Borin comes in and asks where Major Carter is. Faxon tackles him, and Sam activates her ID device. Then she sees the Harvester lowering an Ashen bioweapon over the Stargate. Faxon makes it back to the railing and yells to Sam to go! Then Borin tackles him. Sam reluctantly cuts the rope, flies into the gate room, and orders them to close the iris just in time to stop the weapon. Kinsey is furious, but Sam explains what happened and that she had to leave the ambassador behind. She's hurt physically. She broke her shoulder. Jack says she did good, and Hammerin orders her taken to the infirmary. Kinsey says there's going to be an investigation and storms off. The team indulges in some low-key mockery of Kinsey. Then Daniel says he hopes they don't regret giving the Ashen those gate addresses. Jack says it shouldn't be a problem since the first one goes to a black hole and they get progressively darker after that. Carter tries to smile through the pain as we roll the credits.
As you were doing the synopsis again, Doug doing the synopsis of the episode, and you're talking about flu, pandemic, and vaccines, it just reminded me of real life. I'm just like,
what we're going through right now.
Oh my god. But I was like, I need to ignore all that and just talk about I don't understand why they did not air these two episodes back to back.
That's one of my problems with this episode. It's kind of a...
Because you literally had to revisit Season 4, Episode 16, 2010, to truly understand. Because I was like, is that the same people from that episode where they... When they sent that piece of paper, and I was like, oh, that's right, they all died at the end, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, yeah, they were trying to get pregnant, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I was like, okay. I'm like, yeah, they should have aired this back-to-back.
Finding trivia on SG-1 is very difficult. It's not like, you know, Star Trek or Star Wars where there's just tons of books written about what went on behind the scenes. There should be. This series definitely deserves it, if it's out there, folks, and you know, let me know, please. This episode really felt like filler. It really felt like, you know, oh my God, we're stuck. You know, we've got to start shooting a new episode in 3 weeks and we don't have a script. Let's bang something out real quick. What can we do? All right. Sequel to that one. All right. Fine. Cause I mean, this isn't a bad episode. It's not like, you know, I have a problem with the IMDb rating or anything, but like there are whole bunches of scenes you could totally lift out of this episode and not change the trajectory one bit. There's a lot of filler in this one.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It's just, yeah, you have to, if you don't remember everything that happened, you have to rewatch it all over again. And then it's like, okay, now that makes sense. As I was rewatching briefly, like through bits and parts of 2010, and it's just like, okay, that's kind of cool. But also, listeners, never trust any foreigners that are bearing gifts. Period. Those are straight colonized. That's colonizer mentality. Straight up colonizer mentality. Don't trust the colonizers. Not one bit. You all should fucking learn in this shit by now. Come on now. So I'm just saying that's a lesson I could take from this episode, and I'm going to go ahead and use that as affirmation of never taking gifts from colonizers. So that's a lesson, yes.
Well, to be fair, they didn't know they were colonizers.
It doesn't matter. They're if someone's coming bearing gifts, you don't trust. There's just like too good to be true gifts like that.
Yeah,
like, you can't. No. There's always give and take. Yeah. Humans are horrible.
And that's why Jack was you know, y'all are wanting to give us an awful lot of shit for what we're offering.
Yep. And it was just like, oh, Iron Root. Like, Daniel was just like, that sounds intriguing. Let's go check it out. And like the puns that they were doing between him and Tilkva, we have to dig deeper. I was like, come on, man. Come on, dude. But like, you know, he was, see, at least that was a cool part. Like, you know, showing the anthropology side of Jackson in regards to him saying, oh, Iron Root, that's kind of weird because iron is a very much technologically, is like a sign of technologically advanced people. And so it just makes you wonder, like, what's this Iron Root? Which they found that underground city, well, the city that what they buried and things like that. And it's just like, oh, man. It's like, oh, it's that vaccine. But no, I just... It was more of a Carter episode with her doing some action sequences with the climbing and the falling. You know, that's cool. There's that. But yeah, just... I think it was cool seeing the before part of 2010, seeing like what it actually came out, kind of what it was all coming out to be, because pretty much what was going to happen is if the Ashen was successful, they'd basically bury Earth civilizations and then just use it as an agrarian society of just resources. So mm-hmm. That's pretty much like... So yeah, that's like what aliens do. It's all about resources. Don't trust that Star Trek nonsense, man. No. People aren't trustworthy. That's all there is to it.
Well, and it's, you know, while the ending was kind of, you know, ha ha ha, remember that black hole almost destroyed Earth, and if they hadn't had an iris, it would have.
Well, so here's my thing. It's unfortunate. So basically, they're using a biological... The Ashen were about to disperse a biological weapon through the Stargate. So I guess then that... I mean, more than... Like, most definitely, dude is dead. Smoky eyes or... Faxon, you know,
yeah.
He's dead, and that's going to be sad. And, I mean, are we going to see any more of the Ashen, or is this just basically it?
I don't know.
Let's look. Wiki, don't lie to me. Nope, those are the only two episodes. So yeah, a little one-off of me wanting to see something progress. Like, hey, share cool, like similarly technologically advanced societies, and just leads to greed and horribleness. Just don't trust anyone, guys. It's no good.
Well, you can, I mean, and well, yeah, like you said, the don't trust strangers bearing gifts.
Lollipop, candy, white van, come on. Don't
because, like, you know, the Asgard and the Tok'ra are like, no, you can't have any of our toys because you're kids.
It is fun. It was interesting, though, watching 2001 again. Or, yeah, you know, watching 2010 again with Kinsey, because basically he gives this huge speech on a teleprompter at, like, the 10th anniversary of when the Ashen and Earth did their treaty or whatever, and, like, Kinsey, like, quoting Jack O'Neill and talking about how he's president and started, like, you know, such a wonderful thing. And then you see Kinsey in this episode talking about legacy and being president, and O'Neill's like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with you? This has nothing to do about you. And then he does make it about him, but basically, what's the word, gaslights and blames O'Neill, saying it's about him and his ego playing out. Like, no, it's about saving lives, and, you know, especially Earth. And it's kind of amazing. I mean, just how deluded people can be. So that was an interesting introspect, or, like, you know, when I revisited 2010 episode. But
Ronnie Cox is so good at playing assholes.
Yes, he's good. But yeah, like, you see the same Ashen technology with the teleporter things that they stand on platforms, and yeah, a couple other things too, but for most part similar stuff, same actors too. So I was just like, I should know that person's a bad person, and then I just could not remember those people at all from that episode from 2010. But yeah, it's definitely a filler episode, but it's still kind of okay if you want to revisit 2010, which by no means I think you should, but it helps. So yeah, do what your mileage may vary when revisiting 2001.
Now, one thing I did get a kick out of, Arthur C. Clarke is one of my favorite authors.
Oh yeah, the nod to him.
Yeah, you know, the fact 2000 he wrote the novel of 2001, mm-hmm. and co-wrote the screenplay of it with Stanley Kubrick, mm-hmm. the movie 2001: A Space Odyssey, and then the sequel that he wrote, 2010: Odyssey 2, and in 2010, the alien race that created the monoliths turn Jupiter into a sun. They ignite Jupiter. And so it's got a couple of, and that was one of the things that when Faxon in the briefing asks Sam, how did they do that? And Sam starts going into a Sam speech of, you know, if you increase the density of a sufficiently massive gas giant until a thermonuclear reaction could take place. In fact, Arthur C. Clarke posited that, and Jack jumps in and goes, Ambassador, you got to be careful about the use of the word how, unless you really want to know.
Exactly. I thought it was really, I did enjoy the cuteness between Carter and, what was his name again?
Faxon.
Faxon, yeah.
There's definitely chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah, there is really good chemistry, and it was interesting to see that they didn't play out as Jack being the jealous type, which was, I think I was totally cool with, because they were definitely two very compatible people, and, it's definitely like, that was a possibility, but it's no longer going to be a possibility, and it's kind of sadness.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, they could have had like the anime hearts in their eyes.
And you know what? Honestly, this would have never happened if Jack would have wrote, "Do not deal with the Ashen."
Yeah,
he could have put that on a piece of paper in 2010.
Well, that was another thing that they said. He's like, the next time I do it, I'm going to put more details in there. And Sam's like, well, you probably didn't want to fuck with the timeline too much. And he's like, yeah, I wonder whose idea that was. Jack was on fire in this episode.
Yes, he was. I gotta
say. He had some good stuff going here.
Yeah, he's just like, you fuckers are not listening to me. And then when he got rebuked by, I can't remember names anymore now. Yeah, by Kinsey, who's just like, he didn't get to call in his favor and go see the president, and we'll see.
As much fun as that scene was, it really could have not happened.
Mm-hmm.
It really felt like, geez, we're like 3 minutes short on this episode. We need to put something in there.
The car section was definitely very, very filler. Very, very filler.
So did you have any, I know I just did two of them sort of out of order.
Oh yeah, here. I did it one earlier. But yeah, my favorite quote is, just after arriving on Volia, Faxon's just like, it looks just like, and I was like, oh yeah, just when you think you're not in Kansas anymore, turns out you are. That was just like, I mean, because, Faxon was just, like, so mesmerized by being on another planet, which is very valid. So, you know, I'd feel the same way, too. So, but that was one of my favorite quotes. What was yours?
There were a bunch, but I like during the negotiations, Mollum says to O'Neill, you look pensive. And Jack says, no, I was just thinking.
Yeah, don't judge people that don't have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I don't have a dark sense of humor. Not like horrible, but fucked up. See, there's a difference. And if you don't understand that difference, then you're down and you understand that. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely filler. You can definitely skip, in my opinion, so you don't have to revisit 2010. But just continuing knowing that Senator Kinsey does not like SG. That's pretty much the only thing you get from this is Senator Kinsey does not trust SG-1 and vice versa. They're out to get each. Well, Kinsey's definitely out to get them. And SG-1 needs to be better at communication with themselves in the past. So yeah, there you go.
But you know, it's not a bad episode. You know, you're not going to regret watching it. But yeah, you could easily skip it and not miss anything. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bring anything new to the story.
Sure doesn't. Okay, but yeah, other than that, I don't really have anything else to say.
I just a little something. I got a message today from Matt Zupka.
Oh, what's up, Matt? That's a long-time listener of various
very
podcasts.
Very long time.
So, yeah, for both of us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He messaged me saying, you know, he's a little behind on, he's catching up. And he says, did I hear you correctly that said that you're open to having guests on? And I was like, shit. Hell yeah. So he wants to join us in early in season 6.
Okay. It's gonna be a while. Not gonna lie to you.
But folks, if you want to join us on the show, we are so down with that. You know, the price of admission is you get to do the synopsis.
Yes. That's the price of that's a fair compensation in my opinion. I will be quiet and just enjoy the pleasure of your company and your hard work and efforts on a synopsis.
So you can just, you know, drop us a line at Open the Iris on Twitter, or you can email me at
I don't remember either, man.
It's on the thing. It's a starbase66@gmail.com.
Derp. Okay.
So, yeah, I don't even know. It's only been my podcasting email for 12 years now. We live in an exhausting time right now, so I hope you'll forgive us for being a little less than on top of things. But it's great to be back. And next week, or next time, not what are we next talking week, about? Next time is Desperate Measures.
Okay, yes, that's the one that they say is next. Okay, yeah, yes,
there's some darkness.
What, the next one sounds even better. Wormhole Extreme?
After that is Wormhole Extreme. Which,
what?
Yeah.
You get to do that one? That sounds cooler than Desperate Measures. I'm not going to lie. I have no idea. Just based on title alone, I'm sad that I don't get to do Wormhole Extreme, but that's okay.
Okay. Okay, folks, well, thank you so much for listening. Ro, thank you for being here tonight.
Oh, as always, thank you as well.
And we will talk to y'all again really soon. So until we get desperately measuring, close the iris.
Open the Iris is a production of the Infinite Potato Alliance. If you'd like to reach us, send an email to the7thchevron@gmail.com. That's the7thchevron. Or on Twitter @OpenTheIris. Our theme is by Stephen Cogswell, and you can find more of his music at stephencogswell.bandcamp.com, and our logo is by Brandon Ushio of the Fandom Podcast.